At the age of 10, I received my first pair of glasses. Finally. I say finally because for at least a couple of years prior to that, the chalkboard, if you're too young to know what that is, ask someone who's older. The chalkboard at school had been getting progressively more blurry. And the books that I was always reading kept getting closer and closer and closer. So finally, I was examined and prescribed glasses. Now, the optician who filled the prescription for me gave me a warning when he gave me the new glasses. He said, "Don't wear these on the ride home." We had a long ride home, about an hour and a half. He said, "The difference is so much that you might become a little ill." So I didn't wear them until I got home. And as soon as we got home, I got out of the car, put on my new glasses, and I remember very distinctly being amazed by what I saw. For the first time in my conscious memory, I was able to look at a tree from some distance and see actual individual leaves. And I was able to see blades of grass by looking down while I was still standing up. It was amazing to me. My 10-year-old world suddenly came into a much sharper focus. In chapter 9 of the Gospel of Mark, we find Jesus taking three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, that inner circle that we so often see with Jesus. He takes them up on a high mountain in a kind of a mini retreat, if you will, away from the crowds and the hustle and the bustle and all of the curiosity seekers who were around them. Now, it had been a difficult week or 10 days for the disciples. Within the last few days, several important things had happened. If we look back in chapter 8 of Mark, first of all, Peter makes that famous, beautiful, "Who do you say that I am?" confession. In a flash of insight, he says, "You are the Messiah." But then Jesus begins teaching what that actually is going to mean. And Peter, in a follow-up to his brilliant insight, was having none of it. He didn't want to hear about suffering and death. And he earned himself a sharp rebuke from Jesus for his efforts. So it had been a difficult few days. Things were tense. And then they go up onto this unnamed mountain with Jesus, looking just to get away. And instead, they see and hear things that they simply cannot make sense of. Before their eyes, Jesus' appearance is changed, and he becomes dazzling, almost like they put on a pair of corrective lenses and suddenly saw Jesus clearly and distinctly for the first time. And then, as if that were not enough, as if that sight were not unsettling enough, suddenly there is Elijah and Moses chatting with Jesus. That was too much. They didn't know what to do. They were dumbfounded. They were plain and simple, terrified. And then, the icing on the cake, the voice. The voice that was like the one that Jesus heard at his baptism way back in Mark chapter 1. But this time, the voice was audible to the disciples as well. And so for the second time in the Gospel of Mark, the voice proclaims that Jesus is the beloved Son. But then, just to emphasize the target audience for this proclamation, the voice adds, "Listen to him." And so they're probably wondering, to what are we listening? And we can assume, maybe safely, that it means listen to everything he says. That seems like a good plan. But I think even more specifically, the voice is intending for them to listen to what Jesus has to say about being Messiah, about suffering and death and resurrection. So on the mountain, the disciples see Jesus more clearly than ever, and they hear a voice from the cloud, and they are left flummoxed. None of what they have seen and heard in this experience on the mountain makes any sense in light of their previous assumptions about how the world works. They have entered uncharted territory for themselves, and their old maps of reality simply don't provide any guidance. The things that they thought they knew and that they thought they believed have been stood on their head and turned sideways and inside out. In moments like this one in today's text, I feel a real kinship with the disciples. Now, sometimes they end up being the butt of our jokes, and we lampoon them for how they just don't get it. And it's true, many times they simply just don't get it. We scoff at them and wonder, how can you be so clueless after having been with Jesus for so long? But honestly, do we have a much better track record? Can we say that faced with the immediacy of Jesus' presence as they were, that we would have fared a whole lot better? My guess is, and certainly my experience is for myself, that I'm a lot like Peter. Every once in a while, I might manage a nugget, some little insight, but then I will follow that up with a gross misunderstanding of what that insight means. We move from confessing Jesus as Messiah immediately to trying to stop him from teaching us what that means. We walk with him day by day, and we fail to see him for who and what he truly is. We promise to journey with him only partway through to try to grab the wheel away from him and steer our own course. When we listen to Jesus, when we see him for who he truly is, our beliefs and assumptions are shown to be inadequate. Everything we thought we knew gets turned on its head, sideways and inside out. Just like the disciples, Jesus has a tendency to leave us flummoxed. The good news, the very good news, is that Jesus didn't leave the disciples in that state. Yes, they're still confused by what they saw, and they still don't have any idea what to make of the whole suffering Messiah thing. But Jesus does not leave them in search of more capable disciples, smarter, better listeners, more able of putting together the pieces. No, Jesus is faithful to those that he's called as his followers. He walks back down the mountain with them, and he continues to instruct them He continues to journey with them, and he takes them with him in all of their inadequacy for the task. And then the last little instruction that he offers them in this text, to remain quiet about what they saw on the mountain until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. Why would he do that? My guess is that it's because that in the light of resurrection, things would make a little bit more sense. The resurrection would become the corrective lenses the disciples needed to understand what they had seen and heard and to bring it into sharper focus. When their vision was finally corrected in the light of resurrection, they could see the leaves on the trees and the blades of grass under their feet and Jesus for who he truly is. The beloved Son standing right in front of them and walking among them. And then they would no longer be flummoxed. Just like his original followers, Jesus does not leave us stranded in our confusions and our misunderstandings. In the journey of our discipleship, we see and hear things that simply do not make sense to us. Sometimes we find ourselves called to travel in directions we do not want to go. Often we are left flummoxed by what Jesus is trying to teach us and show us. But we never find ourselves left behind. No matter how mired in confusion and misunderstanding we become, Jesus doesn't leave us in search of more capable followers. No matter how much remedial spiritual work we need, Jesus doesn't leave us stranded on the side of the mountain. He gathers us up in all our messy contradictions, and he walks down with us, teaching us on the way. And like those original followers, when we look at things through the lens of resurrection, we see the glory that was in front of and among us all the time. As we prepare now to enter into the season of Lent, we understand that the journey is a long one. Sometimes the 40 days of Lent end up feeling like 400. And we have to travel through some difficult terrain, but we don't travel alone. We have one another, companions on our journey through Lent and in the journey of our lives. And Jesus, the one we follow, walks with and among us, teaching us, leading, guiding, healing, and revealing. Just because we might not always be sure of the route doesn't mean we're not being led. Jesus, who has called us to follow, is faithful to us. He doesn't confound us and then leave us stranded. He doesn't overawe us and terrify us and then walk away. In our moments of deepest confusion and greatest fear, Jesus gathers us up and brings us along on his journey through suffering to the glory of resurrection. This is the kind of good news that transfigures life. Revealing the glory of the presence of God shining through all around us. May God grant us the corrected vision to see. Amen.